Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to Simply Scottish, the long-running podcast of Scottish music and culture. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. Today, we're dusting off an episode of Simply Scottish when it was a radio show to bring you selections from radio episode 85. You'll hear profiles of medical pioneer Elsie Ingalls and music legend Sir Harry Lauder. And you'll hear my father, Andrew Sr., share a funny memory from a trip to the Scottish Highlands way back in 1978. Right now, let's keep listening to our opening music from the Glasgow-based folk band Nos. The tune's called The Silver Fox. Listening to Simply Scottish. Not a lot of new listener feedback this past month. Lots of people out and about taking their summer holidays. If I haven't heard from you yet, drop me a quick line to let me know where you're listening from and what your connection to Scotland is. I love hearing that stuff. A quick thank you to Dawn, host of the podcast Scottish Murders. She recently left a 5-star review of Simply Scottish on the British side of Apple Podcasts platform. Dawn says, "I am Scottish, and I thoroughly enjoy listening to this podcast. It makes me feel at home. But whether you're Scottish or not, you'll instantly feel immersed in Scotland and its history." High praise indeed from a native Scot. Thank you very much, Dawn. Coming up, selections from Simply Scottish Radio Episode 85, which originally aired on April 12, 2000. That's almost exactly half a lifetime ago for me. Wow. But first, back to music. One of the tunes we aired that night was from Bonnie Rideout. Here she is now with a track from her 2020 album, The Cliff Island Sessions. It's a lovely tune called Pettingill Rose.
Pettingill Rose.
This is Simply Scottish. The content and some of the music of today's episode comes from our radio archive. As you may know, before it was a podcast, Simply Scottish was a weekly radio program airing in South Texas and a handful of other stations in the US and Canada from 1999 to 2001. Show 85, from April 12, 2000, featured my father and I highlighting the life and work of two influential Scots, Elsie Ingalls and Sir Harry Lauder. They were born just 6 years apart, Ingalls in 1864 in the foothills of the Himalayas before being brought to Scotland at an early age, and Lauder in 1870 in Scotland's capital city. In addition to our profiles of these famous Scots, you'll also hear my father share a humorous story from his tour of the Scottish Highlands back in 1978 with wife Samantha, who was heavily pregnant with yours truly at the time. My dad had a flair for storytelling, so you won't want to miss that. Let's cut now to a younger me with my co-host and father, Andrew Sr. You'll also hear some music that we chose for that episode, including music from Capper Cayley, Runrig, and Harry Lauder himself.
One of our spotlights tonight falls on Elsie Ingalls, medical pioneer and suffragette based in Edinburgh, Scotland. Both my sister and I were both born in Elsie Ingalls Hospital, which was named after Ingalls for all the work she did in the medical field. To Edinburgh women of a certain age, Elsie Ingalls has ceased to be a person. Instead, the name evokes memories of a hospital. The Elsie Ingalls Maternity Hospital, opened in 1925, is a friendly, woman-oriented place with a proud history in childbirth. Ingalls never saw the hospital at Spring Gardens near the back of Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh. It was opened in her memory and stood as a memorial to a remarkable woman who adopted Edinburgh as her base and played an important part in the city's political scene and health service, as well as making an honourable contribution to the war effort. Its closure and reinvention as a nursing home reveals that 82 years after her death, Ingalls' life's work is far from over. Ingalls moved to Scotland, the land of her family, and in 1889 opened the Medical College for Women. Women from as far away as Australia trained there until it merged with the Edinburgh Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons in 1909. By the turn of the century, Ingalls had an impressive alphabet after her name, as soon as the university allowed women to graduate in medicine. Her first job was as a house surgeon in the New Hospital for Women in London, where she worked with Elizabeth Garrett Anderson, the first woman to qualify as a doctor in Britain. Ingalls then opened her own nursing home in Scotland and practiced as a nurse, many times waiving her fee to help less fortunate people. She would continue doing this until World War broke out, and it was then that her kindness stretched beyond the borders of Scotland. We'll continue our look at the life of Elsie Ingalls in a few moments. Elsie Ingalls did much for the working class of Glasgow and Edinburgh, and for Scottish women in general. She was an active suffragist, speaking at meetings all over the country, and acting as honorary secretary of the Scottish Federation of Women's Suffrage Societies from 1906 to 1914. Suffragists believe in agitating for the vote in a law-abiding manner, and Ingalls lived to see her efforts paying off. Women over the age of 30 were granted the vote shortly before her death. She did not live long enough to enter the polling booth herself. At the outbreak of the First War, the Scottish Federation of Women's Suffrage Societies decided to form a medical unit which could go to the front lines. They sent doctors, nurses, and ambulance drivers to France, Serbia, Salonika, Corsica, and also provided care for Serbian and Russian troops on the Russo-Romanian front. Ingalls herself went to Serbia in 1915, where the reinvasion of the territory by advancing German, Austrian, and Bulgarian armies drove the Serbs back. In spite of the danger, Ingalls and her staff stayed with the Serb patients. The result was that doctors, nurses, and the wounded were all taken prisoner. Eventually, they were released and came home via Austria and Switzerland. This experience did not leave Elsie Ingalls in the best of health, but the next year she joined a large medical unit sailing for Russia to join the Serbs on the Dobruja front. Their chief of medical staff recalled, "She maintained a unique discipline during the regular fighting and during the terrible retreat when her hospitals were ceaselessly bombed. She worked without a day's rest, not shrinking from even the worst and most arduous tasks. We shall never forget when we saw the Scottish woman collecting our wounded from the firing line in their own automobiles." Ingalls' commitment to the Serbs was such that despite her own failing health, Ingalls ignored medical advice to go home. She hung on until the military situation was resolved, and sailed home with her unit in October of 1917. She died on November 26th, shortly after her ship docked, and was buried in Edinburgh's Dean Cemetery with full military honours. The Scottish Women's Hospital continued its work. Women got the vote, and the war revolutionised attitudes to women's abilities in medical as well as other fields. The Elsie Ingalls Memorial Fund was launched after her death and raised enough money for the Edinburgh Hospital which bore her name, as well as one in Belgrade. She is remembered with honour in Russia and Serbia, as well as in Scotland. She was a truly remarkable woman.
Le bron, le gul.
Sir Harry Lauder is remembered by many as a wonderful singer and entertainer, one who could laugh and make you laugh, even in the face of tragedy. Tonight, my father and I will look at the life and music of Harry Lauder and why he has a legacy that will continue for many years. To start off with, here's some commentary on Harry Lauder from my father.
Well, Sir Harry Lauder is one of Scotland's most famous sons. Sir Harry Lauder was born way back at the turn of the century, and he made his mark on the stage in vaudeville, and consequently he was so popular at that time, which was doing the old musicals, and a lot of stage work was done in the days of Sir Harry Lauder. And before television ever came out, everybody went to the theatre, went to the shows, and the opera, or the silver screen, of course. We had the silver screen at a very, very young age, way back in the early 20s, and with the silent films going on to the first talkies. And, of course, Sir Harry Lauder was in amongst all that. And of course, nobody knew too much about the musical side of Sir Harry Lauder. It was basically a Scottish thing. Nobody ventured out of Scotland with musical endeavours, other than bagpipers who played in the military or in campaigns or whatever at different parts of the world. But Sir Harry Lauder brought to the forefront the musical side of the Scottish person, if you want to call it. He epitomised the Scottish man with a dram of whiskey and a red nose, and always telling jokes, and a cheerful face, and probably a little bit like W.C. Fields of his day. And I'm sure he probably met the great man W.C. Fields, who had, in my estimation, a very, very similar type of nature, although one was an American actor, and Sir Harry Lauder was basically on the stage. And he was hugely successful in America way back in the early 40s, during the war and after the war. He made so much money at the time. It was reported to be that he was making $5,000 way back in the 40s, which was unbelievable for an entertainer, especially one that from overseas.
I've seen lots of bonny lassies on my travels wide, but my heart is set for new on bonny Kate McBride. Although I'm no a fella that would throw a word away, I'm surprised sometimes myself at all I've got to say. Roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde, roaming in the gloaming with my lassie by my side. When the sun has gone to rest, that's the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming, roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. The sun has gone to rest, that's the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. One night in the gloaming we were tripping side by side. I kissed her twice and I asked her once if she would be my bride. She was shy and so was I, we were both the same. But I got brave and braver on the journey coming home. roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roaming in the gloaming with my laddie by my side. When the sun has gone to rest, that's the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming, roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roaming in the gloaming with my laddie by my side. When the sun has gone to rest, that's the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. Oh, I tell you, strolling, we got in at 9:30. And sitting at the kitchen fire, I asked her to be mine. When she promised, I got up and I danced the heel and fling. I've just been to the jeweler's and I've bought her a bonny wee ring. Oh, roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roaming in the gloaming with my laddie by my side. When the sun has gone to rest, that's the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming, roaming in the gloaming on the bonny banks of Clyde. Roaming in the gloaming with my laddie by my side. When the sun has gone to rest, that's the time that we love best. Oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. Ah, oh, it's lovely roaming in the gloaming. Oh, I tell you, roaming in the gloaming, man, when there's nobody there but your Sally.
On January the 1st, 1916, while Sir Harry Lauder was on tour during World War I, he received a telegram while having breakfast with friends at the Bonington Hotel in London. It read, "Captain John Lauder, killed in action, December 28th, 1917. Harry Lauder and his beloved wife, Nance, lost their only child, a son, on a battlefield in France. The theatre manager closed the show until further notice, knowing it would be impossible for any star to go on stage telling jokes and singing. Harry rushed home to be with his wife and spend a private night of grief and prayer. His wife reminded him of millions of other parents that would receive similar telegrams and encouraged him to go back to London and reopen the show to keep from putting hundreds of people out of badly needed work. Returning to the theatre, he was given a letter that had arrived by special messenger. It was from a fellow officer that had been with his son John when he was killed. The officer wrote that Lauder's son John had died with great gallantry, calling out the words, "Carry on." Harry Lauder, in a devastating state of loss, answered his dying son in the only way he knew, and the call of entertainers, "The show must go on," was born. Harry did carry on that night, singing his songs and telling jokes, giving all he had to give. When the final curtain fell, he fainted.
Yes, just reading that story a few days ago from a newspaper from Scotland brought back a lot of fond memories of Sir Harry Lauder. And I'm being honest with you, I didn't know that story about the son that was killed during the war, which made it even more sad. But the people of Scotland always will remember Sir Harry Lauder for his cheerfulness, his songs, which epitomised the person of a Scots person. And to this day, Harry Lauder's, the legacy of what he left to the stage in Scotland has been carried on by numerous entertainers. Andy Stewart, Moira Anderson, and many, many more have all done and tried to shine in the same manner as Harry Lauder. And he will always remain a great part in the Scottish people's hearts.
You've been listening to selections from radio episode 85 of Simply Scottish. Before we close, I thought I'd share a story from my father. One of the features I did regularly on the radio programme back then was called Scotland's Small Wonders, short profiles of Scotland's amazing islands off the western and northern shores of the mainland. After highlighting the Isle of Muck on this episode, my father decided to share a memory from a trip with his wife through the Highlands of Scotland back in 1978. It involves weary travellers, an innkeeper and his wife, and a rather unorthodox ferry ride experience. Let's listen to that now.
Well, talking about one particular jewel, I hope my wife's listening to this. Are you listening, Samantha? I remember many years ago, and I think my son was inside Mummy's tummy at the time, we were doing a little tour in a Mini, which is a very small, compact little car, which was all the rage way back in the early 70s. It was done by Ford Austin, I think it was. And it was a tiny little car, but very roomy for some reason. And we decided to go up in the Highlands. And we started touring off. And we got to this little place up in the Highlands where we'd have to get a ferry, because we just kept going and the road just seemed to stop. And there was a part of an inlet with raging waters, which was leading out to the sea. And there was a tiny little hotel there. It was just a small, small place, just like a Scottish pub. And it was a Sunday morning. The rain was pouring down. It was bitter cold. And my wife was very heavily pregnant. I had this car, and I knocked at the door. And the lady opened the door, and I was standing there pouring with rain, soaked to the skin. And she said, "Good morning." I said, "Good morning, ma'am." I says, "I have my wife over here. She's pregnant. We're soaking wet. Could you let us come into the inn and get warm and stuff?" And she stood there while I was dripping wet, didn't even ask me to come in. I think she was so shocked at seeing another human being. And I stood there, and I'm waiting for her to let me in the inn. Eventually, I said, "Ma'am," I says, "it's pouring rain out here." I says, "Do you think I could come in for some shelter?" "Oh, yes, yes, yes." She went through to the kitchen and told her husband, and he came out, and he looked me over and all sorts, and I said, "Could I come in and dry off?" So I walked into the bar, and there was a lovely big fire, and I just started, and I got my wife to come in, and they were still treating us like very, very odd people. Now, it was probably a little bit odd that somebody would be there at that time in the morning and the weather was so bad. Well, my wife and I got all nice and warm and stuff, and it was coming up for the hour of 12 o'clock, but it wasn't quite. So the man went behind the bar and he said, "Could I get you a little drink, maybe a wee whiskey to warm you up?" And I said, "Yes, that would be fine, but don't you open at 12 o'clock? He says, "Yes, but under the circumstances, I think we could open a little bit early." So we had a little whiskey, and my wife had a brandy or something, and she sat down, got all dried off, and he spoke about different things. Then he went away. I said, "Where are you going?" He said, "Well, I have to go down and get the ferry ready." I said, "Oh, you do?" Off he went. He put a cap on. He went down to the little slipway, and there was this little one-man, two-vehicle ferry, which was going to take us over this rough water. And he got his hat, went on, got the engine started, and he said, "You better get your car and get on board." And this thing was jumping up and down with the waves and stuff, and I said, "You must be crazy." "Oh, don't worry," he says, "you just have to count the waves, and when you get to a certain figure, when it goes down, you go on." So I eventually got the car on, but just before that, he took off his cap, which was like a sailor's cap, captain's cap, and he put on another one, and I said, "What do you put on a different hat for?" He said, "Well, you'll be wanting some gasoline, or petrol, as they said." So he went up to this ancient pump and started pumping gas by hand. It was a hand pump. Now, you can imagine how long it took. Well, eventually we got the stuff in, got onto this tiny little craft, and we sailed rather haphazardly across this rough water. And there was more to it than that, but I never saw anyone changing caps and changing jobs because it was only one man. And it was rather daunting.
Our ending quote this evening comes from a popular song called The End of the Road by Sir Harry Lauder, whom we featured tonight. The chorus says, "Keep right on to the end of the road, keep right on to the end. Though the way be long, let your heart be strong, keep right on round the bend. Though you're tired and weary, still journey on, till you come to your happy abode, where all you love, you've been dreaming of, will be there at the end of the road." I'm Andrew McDermott Jr.
And I'm Andrew McDermott Sr.
And until next week on Simply Scottish, may God bless you and have a great night.
Well, that's it for this episode. I'll be back next month. Until then, catch up on previous episodes anywhere you get your podcasts. I also post episode notes at simplyscottish.com, where you can get the details on music I play, as well as links to more resources. That's at simplyscottish.com. And as always, reach out to me anytime, andrew@simplyscottish.com. We'll close with music from the Paul McKenna Band. It's a song about trying to make new connections while recognizing the value of old ones. From the album Paths to Wind, this is Long Days. Join me again soon for your next virtual trip to Scotland. Until then, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.
The grass is always green until you try to walk it, and the earth in all its glory holds you in an empty pocket. Long days, wandering minds, to the end of what we call a road and the endless paths that wind. Long days, wandering minds. You lose the ones you love in search of something greater. The ones you find cannot replace the ones you left behind. Now life just passes by like waves upon the ocean. Time trickles down the rolling hills, my journey's set in motion. Long days, wandering minds, to the end of what we call a road, to the endless paths that wind. Long days, wandering minds. With loving friends and laughter, 4,000 miles will lie between a bond that never ends. Returning home to find you're happy ever after won't be the same when someone isn't there to hold your hand. Long days, wandering minds, to the end of what we call a road, the endless paths that wind. Long days, wandering minds, to the end of what we call a road, and the endless paths that wind.